This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not-so-nice things. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Lacey.
And I'm Ashley, and this is United States of Murder. This week, we'll talk about an abduction and series of murders in the 80s.
Then, we'll discuss how a text from a dead woman's phone leads to an arrest in her murder.
So buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Sunshine State.
Serial killers rarely leave behind survivors. Survivors are a risk, and for serial killers, self-preservation is everything. It's rare for a person to come face to face with pure evil and live to tell the tale. However, there are several instances where the intended victims did manage to survive. Usually, when faced with something frightening, we feel our heartbeat quicken. We tense up, we breathe faster, we may tremble or begin to sweat. This reaction is known as the fight or flight response. The fight or flight response is triggered by the release of hormones that prepare your body to either stay and deal with the threat or to run away to safety. It's impossible to know how we would react under certain circumstances, but we can do something. We can research on how survivors actually made it out alive. Some survivors fought off their attacker, escaped, or used psychology to talk their way out. Some used their physical abilities, and others used their intellectual abilities. It's not always possible, but something else we can do is to pay attention to warning signs. According to Peter Vronsky, a criminal justice historian and author, there are some signs to look for. The first sign is feigned weakness. For example, Ted Bundy wore a fake arm sling and asked women for help, claiming that he was injured. Another is when a stranger gives too much unnecessary information. They're trying to seem more familiar to you than they really are. Another is an unrequested promise. For example, just one drink and I will take you home, I promise. You never asked him to promise you anything. Sudden offers of unsolicited promises can be an underlying agenda. There are countless others, but one thing stands above the rest for me. Always trust your instincts. Lisa McVeigh had a rough start in life. She suffered from abuse early on in her childhood and bounced around different foster homes over 5 years. Her mother was an addict who ended up living on the streets, and at the age of 14, Lisa went to live with her grandmother and her grandmother's boyfriend. This was not a safe haven for her. Her grandmother's boyfriend began emotionally and sexually abusing Lisa. Each time he molested her, he would hold a gun to her head. The grandma did know about this. Yeah, it's pretty terrible. So after suffering this abuse for over 3 years, Lisa had decided she wanted out. She would rather end her own life than go through this anymore. So around 2 a.m. in the early hours of November 3rd, 1984, Lisa was leaving her double shift at a Krispy Kreme in Tampa, Florida. So this was the day. She had already decided that as soon as she got home, she was going to carry out her plan. Her suicide note was already written. So she got on her bike and started cycling home when all of a sudden a car approached her from behind and started aggressively honking their horn. She knew that they were trying to get her attention, but she just ignored it and kept going. And a few moments later, as she's passing a church, someone rips her off her bike from behind. So of course she starts screaming, but then a man held a gun against her temple and said, "Shut up or I'll blow your brains out." He blindfolded, gagged, and bound her, then forced her into his car. So before he completely tightened the blindfold, she had the instinct to clench her face and jaw so that when her face relaxed, there would be a little wiggle room left for her to potentially see from below, like under her blindfold.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't think I would have thought about that.
No.
She said the Lord's Prayer to herself and told the man, "I'll do whatever you want, just don't kill me." And it was in this instant she decided that she wasn't going to end her own life, and she was not going to let someone else kill her either. So if there was a slight chance she was going to make it out alive, she knew she had to look for identifying marks. And she noticed the car had white seats, and a dark red carpet. The carpet was thick and a little unusual, so she was kind of guessing he installed it himself. And she saw the word Magnum on the dashboard. She was also on her period at the time and had the idea to deliberately get blood on his backseat. Genius, right?
I mean, first of all, if you're on your period, it's going to, you know. Mm-hmm.
And he had white seats as well, so.
Ugh.
Yeah, but she.
That's terrible. That is awful. Continue.
Yeah, but she did it on purpose in case. Right. Yeah, they would find her. Yeah, which is a good idea.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, she could tell that they were driving north. And since the windows were rolled down, she could tell that they were on the interstate because of how much wind was coming in.
They were going fast.
Yeah, you know how you can kind of tell. Yeah, she knew they were going fast. Well, his car was rattling and it sounded like it needed an oil change. I don't know that I would know what that sounded like because I don't know anything about cars, but that's what she thought. So she estimated that they were driving for about 20 minutes, but to her, of course, it felt more like hours. He stopped the car and ordered her out. She could see leaves at her feet.
So she's looking down.
Right. So she has the blindfolds around her, but she can see. She has enough wiggle room to where she can kind of, she can look down and still right. see stuff below right. her. So she could see that there's leaves. And she's kind of assuming that she's in the woods, just based on how the ground looks.
Right.
He grabs her arm and walks her into a building with green carpet that has yellow and red specks on it. So she's so smart, she counts every step she takes. They go up 19 stairs.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I would panic and not be able to think.
There's no way I could remember this.
But rationally. Yeah,
she counts 19 stairs. Then she knows that they made a left turn. Then she knows they made a quick right turn. And then she realizes, okay, I think we're in an apartment building just by how everything seemed.
Right.
So he takes her into his apartment and orders her to undress, and then he tells her to get into the shower. So he takes her blindfold off for this. I'm not sure why, but maybe he didn't want to get it wet. I don't know, but he did, you know, tell her, don't look at me. But of course, she does inconspicuously, and she knows at least that he has short brown hair.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's a white guy. So he then washes her in the shower. But he does put the blindfold back on her and then throws her to the ground and rapes her. Yeah, afterwards, he ties her back up and puts her in a waterbed.
In a waterbed?
Not inside of it, sorry. On a waterbed. He puts her on a waterbed.
Wait, what? Yeah, well, because I was thinking like maybe underneath.
He put her on top of the waterbed. And she took in the surroundings and with her other senses and she could smell fresh paint. And she got the inkling that it's a clean apartment.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, maybe because of the smell. It seemed neat from what she could tell. So over the next 26 hours, he continuously rapes her. And he would slap her and punch her a few times as well. And at one point, he would even drag his gun across her stomach so that she... So to give her a message, you know, like, hey, I have this gun. Don't do anything.
This guy's an asshole.
Yeah. And he makes her put her hands on his face at one point.
What?
Yeah. Just kind of strange. And she noted, of course, because she was feeling his face, he had a small mustache and pockmarks on his skin and a snub nose. She could also tell that he wasn't very heavy and he seemed clean. He let her use the bathroom at one point, and so at this point, she goes in there and leaves her fingerprints everywhere.
She's just touching everything.
She's touching everything she can as quickly as she can. Because she's like thinking, okay, they need to search this apartment. I want my DNA to be here. I want my fingerprints to be here. So this man did talk to Lisa a bit, and he even asked her what her name was. She lied and said Carol. He also asked her to describe the girls that she went to high school with.
Ew.
Yeah, he wanted to know about their bodies and like what they looked like when they were changing in gym class.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So she made things up and told him what he wanted to hear. She wanted to be on his good side because she knew what it was like. You know, from her experience with her grandma's boyfriend, she didn't want to set him off because she didn't want to get beaten or worse. At one point, he made her a sandwich and gave her a soda. Airwolf was playing on the TV, and then it was interrupted by a news report. that a 17-year-old female named Lisa was reported missing. So her emotions just grabbed her all at once, and in that moment, her demeanor switched, and she just started crying and screaming. Because, like, it was real. She's been abducted. She just, fear took over. So he puts the gun to her head and says, "If you scream one more time, I'll be forced to put a bullet in your head. Stop crying." So she took note that he used the word forced. And she was thinking, okay, well, maybe he doesn't want to kill me. Maybe his goal was raping, not murder. So she kept that tucked away and she started to use reverse psychology. So her goal was pretty much for him to view her as a person, not an object. She wanted to have more of a dialogue with her so he could, maybe things could be a little relatable. And at one point he mentioned to her that he had raped other women. And Lisa asked him why he was doing it. And he said, "Just to get back at women in general, I had a bad breakup."
Let it go.
That's not how you handle a bad breakup. Ugh. She told him it was unfortunate how they met and that no one had to know about any of this. She can just be his girlfriend. She was trying to kind of trick him, you know, and make him think she actually did like him. Like, hey, let's not talk about how this went, but we can be a couple, whatever. And she tried to tell him she could take care of him and look after him. And he said, "No, I can't keep you." So as they talk a little more, Lisa decided to concoct a story. She told him that her father was ill, which of course was not true. Her father was not in the picture. And she said that the only person to take care of him was her and that she needed to be around to help her dad. So 26 hours later, at 4:30 a.m., he drove Lisa to a spot where she lived. But before he dropped her off, he stopped at an ATM and Lisa could see that they were near a Quality Inn and a Howard Johnson's hotel. He told her to stand there for 5 minutes so that he could have time to drive away and then she would be free. So she got out of the car and was standing there, and as he was driving away, she took off her blindfold, but she did catch a glance of his red Dodge Magnum. So immediately she ran home, told her grandma or grandma's boyfriend about what just happened, and they thought she was lying.
They didn't believe her?
No. In fact, her grandma's boyfriend yanked her by the hair, threw her to the ground, and continuously beat and interrogated her for 5 hours. He was asking her where she had really been and why she had been cheating on him. Yes. She's been held captive, raped continuously for 26 hours, gets free, runs home. They think she's lying, and then she gets beaten and abused even more. So finally, her grandma did call Tampa police, and this is what the grandma said. "Don't worry about that missing girl. She's home, and she's making up some story about being kidnapped." And the police responded, you know, "Well, that's great that she's back, but we still have to do a police investigation."
Yeah, we have to follow
up. We have to talk. And she had mentioned that if it weren't for this, she would have gone through with suicide. She's like, if it weren't for them having to do an interrogation, because being beaten and raped and then you're home and she had no one in her corner. So Lisa said this in an interview with Melinda Beck. "At the police station, I tell my story to a female detective, and my demeanor is so calm that she thinks I'm lying. She wants to go over it again and again, and I finally say, 'No, bring in somebody more intelligent.'"
What?
Yeah. I guess she just kind of thought she was talking down to her, like she wasn't believing her story.
Right. She was being condescending.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and she's so, like, "I already got that at home. I need to tell you that."
Yeah, it's like, "Nope, bring someone else in if you think I'm lying, whatever." But so the next day, this is what she says. "The next day I go over the same story with Sergeant Larry Pinkerton, who's in charge of sexual crimes. And then I hear him tell one of the female detectives, 'I believe her, call the FBI.'" So Lisa gave the authorities so much valuable information because, you know, she took note of everything in every way she could. So they searched for ATMs near the two hotels that she spotted, and there was only one ATM. So then they had the bank provide a list of people who had made transactions around the same time that Lisa was released, and there was only one person, Bobby Joe Long. So what happened to Lisa was horrific, and they didn't want anyone else to suffer at his hands, but they soon found out what they were dealing with, a serial killer. So remember the red carpet in the car?
Mm-hmm.
Well, police were able to pull those fibers from Lisa's clothes, and they were actually matched to fibers found off two recent women who had been found murdered.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and this was actually in a Forensic Files episode, the fibers. So police found the Dodge Magnum and put a 36-hour surveillance operation on him. They saw him stuffing things in a big green trash bin outside of his home and draining his waterbed.
Mm-hmm.
He was planning on leaving town by the looks of it. They finally arrested him outside of a movie theater days after Lisa's abduction. But he had killed two more women in the meantime. So Bobby Joe Long had been terrorizing the entire Tampa area. After he was arrested, he was convicted of killing 8 women, but he confessed to 10. So he also raped and sexually assaulted many more. So Bobby Joe Long had also committed at least 50 rapes, and he was called the classified ad rapist in Fort Lauderdale, Ocala, Miami, and Dade County. So starting in 1981, he answered classified ads for small appliances, and if he found a woman at home alone, he would rape her. He was tried and convicted for rape in 1981, but then requested a new trial, which was granted, and then his charges were later dropped. He can rape 50 women and get off for that. It's unbelievable. So Lisa was the only ever victim of Bobby Joe Long to survive being abducted by him. The bodies of the victims were typically found in a state of decomposition long after the murders. They were usually dumped near a rural roadside and dragged into the woods. Just going to read through the known victims real fast. Artist Ann Wick, age 20, killed on March 27th, 1984. Lana T. Long, 19, killed on May 13th, 1984. Michelle Denise Sims, 22, killed on May 27th, 1984. Linda Nuttall, assaulted in May 1984. She survived. Elizabeth Lundenbeck, 22, killed on June 8th, 1984. Vicki Marie Elliott, 21, killed on September 7th, 1984. Chanel Devon Williams, 18, killed on October 7th, 1984. Karen Beth Disfriend, 28, killed on October 14th, 1984. And that's his birthday.
Mm-mm.
I just put that together. That's dark. Okay. Kimberly Kyle Hobbs, 22, killed on October 31st, 1984. Virginia Lee Johnson, 18, killed on November 6th, 1984. Kim Marie Swan, 21, killed on November 11th, 1984. So these are
they're
so quick.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, whew. And they all looked different. There wasn't different races, different hair colors.
There's no pattern.
Just that they're female. So he pled guilty on September 24th, 1985 to all of these crimes and received 26 life sentences without the possibility of parole and 7 life sentences with the possibility of parole after 25 years. So the state retained the option to seek the death penalty for the murder of Michelle Sims, one of his victims, and in July 1986, the penalty phase of the Michelle Sims trial was held in Tampa. So it lasted 1 week and received extensive media attention. Apparently she was a beauty queen. She was in a lot of pageants. So it was on the media a lot. Long was found guilty and sentenced to die in Florida's electric chair. So he actually ended up being executed by lethal injection on May 23rd, 2019. And I'm assuming it's because it was so long after he was sentenced, they just changed the way they did that. But so yeah, 30 years after his conviction, he was put to death. He was pronounced dead at 6:55, and he closed his eyes and made no last statement. Yeah. So I don't want to talk about him too much, but I am always curious to know what their childhood was like or
what may
something.
Have, yeah.
I don't, you know. So Bobby Joe Long was born on October 14th. 1953, in Canova, West Virginia, to Joe and Luetta Long. So Long was born with an extra X chromosome, also known as 47XXY, which is a specific variant of Klinefelter syndrome. Have you ever heard of it?
Nope.
I hadn't either.
What is it?
So this condition results in excessive estrogen producing some female traits such as breast development. So because of this, he was made fun of as a child for his large breasts and underwent a breast reduction.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in adolescence.
Wow. No, I didn't.
I didn't.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So Klinefelter syndrome may adversely affect testicular growth, resulting in smaller than normal testicles. And that can also lead to a lower production of testosterone. I couldn't find specifics, but he also suffered multiple head injuries as a child. And then something that's never surprising is that he had a very dysfunctional relationship with his mother. He slept in her bed until he was a teenager, and he resented her multiple short-term boyfriends. He did end up marrying his high school girlfriend in 1974, with whom he had two children before she filed for divorce in 1980, so not long before his murdering began. Or raping, I guess. He started out doing that. But before their divorce, he got into a really bad motorcycle accident and was hospitalized for several weeks. He suffered head trauma and almost lost a leg. So his now ex-wife, Cynthia, said that she noticed a change in him right after the accident happened. He always had a short temper, but after his accident, he was violent to her and to their kids, which hadn't happened before.
You hear that a lot.
Yeah.
When people have.
Yeah, and she said his sex life also flipped like a switch. He had a pretty normal sex drive before, but after his accident, she said it was almost dangerous. He was hypersexual and violent at the same time.
Like violent sexually?
Yes, and non-sexually. He was just violent most of the time, but yes, sexually violent as well. So just, he changed. He did a 180, so I'm glad that she left him. So as for Lisa, she is now a sheriff's deputy at Hillsborough County, close to where she was abducted. She said this, "I wasn't going to allow anybody to hurt me again, and the only way I knew how to do that was to get into law enforcement. My empowerment comes from being so helpless and lost that feeling like I had when I was 17 years old. I'm not lost anymore. I'm on top of my mountain, and it feels pretty good." She's also been a middle school resource officer since 2004. She calls herself their mama bear. And she'll speak to the kids about her experience. She says this, "I'm not embarrassed to say I was raped. I tell kids if somebody tries to grab them, scream as loud as you can. And if they get taken away, they should mind their P's and Q's and do whatever they can to survive. I tell them to be strong and draw on their own sense of self-preservation." I haven't seen it, but a Lifetime movie was also made about this called Believe Me, The Abduction of Lisa McVeigh. Yeah, it aired in 2018, and like I said, Season 2, Episode 1 of Forensic Files covers this case. So AETV did a really good interview with her that I'll link up in the show notes. And I got a lot of info from ABC News, ChillingCrimes.com, and Morbidology.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That poor girl.
It makes me so mad. I tried to look up what happened to her grandma and her grandma's boyfriend, and I couldn't find anything because...
The fact that he, never got charged with anything, or you said you didn't see anything.
Mm-mm.
I feel like you would have if he would have.
I couldn't even find their names, the grandma's name.
Bunch of bitches.
The grandma came to her when she was young, when she first moved there, and said, "He wants to teach you, how to have sex and stuff."
I cannot... Mm-mm.
Like grooming her. Oh, God, it made me sick. I'm just.
No kid stuff.
A grandmother.
No kid stuff. Mm-mm. Nope. Nope.
It's like, what a terrible.
So this was the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Well, late 70s, I guess, when she was a teenager as well. So late 70s, early 80s. Yeah, but I don't know what happened to her grandma and her grandma's boyfriend now. But
they're dead now.
I hope they're dead now. I hope they got in some type of trouble.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. She didn't have a mom. Well, she had a mom, but she was on the streets
that
doing
poor baby.
Crack. She didn't have a dad in the picture.
Poor baby.
Grandma sucked. Her grandma's boyfriend was abusing her. I know. But I mean.
And then of all people to get abducted, her. Well, it's like, come on. Throw me a freaking bone.
She said this, though. It made me, ooh. So she said, I would thank him now. Thank him for choosing me and not some other 17-year-old girl. Because
she was kind of street smart.
Yeah. She's like, I had dealt with the abuse from my grandmother's boyfriend. I knew this personality. I'm like, oh, that's horrible. But also just she was like, thank you for not picking someone else.
Oh, she's definitely a survivor. Like,
yeah, she's amazing. I'll have to post all the pictures. She's done a lot of interviews.
I'm sure.
But I'm like, the stories.
Well, I hope her life has turned out
amazing. Yeah. From what I can tell, it is. And she really took a terrible life and turned it into something great for herself, which is, whew. Yeah,
it's wild. My face right now. Yeah. I'm just like.
I lost the original thing I found, but I was just kind of looking through survivor stories. Mm-hmm. And it was a Ranker article. And I was like, oh, this one happened in Florida. I'm going to read about this. I'm like, what? Because, of course, you know, there's the usual ones you hear about a lot. Like Ted Bundy had a survivor. Richard Ramirez left a survivor. And she was in this list.
On that note, mm-hmm. Let's take five.
Yeah, let's take
five. Wait a sec. So my case this week is, it's not funny, first of all, that it happened. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. It's
planes, trains, and automobiles.
Seriously. It's funny how the guy was caught. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Still, maybe funny's not the word. It's, he was bamboozled.
Got it.
By the cops. So, let's jump in. So, 35-year-old Lisa Spence was last seen on October 7th, 2009. She had moved to Miramar, Florida from Trinidad and Tobago just 4 years before this. So in 2005, she moved to the United States. Mm-hmm. So her boyfriend, Paul Edwards, lived here in Florida and kind of talked her into moving over here. So they met actually in Trinidad and Tobago where he worked as a prison officer. So he's like a prison guard, basically. And so they met and had a very tumultuous relationship. On again, off again. They'd fight, they'd break up, you know. They did live together. She had two kids from a previous relationship. So her and her two kids lived with Paul in Trinidad. So eventually, she finally did leave and stay gone. And they broke up. And Paul moved to the United States with an ex-girlfriend.
Hmm.
So he's here. She's still there with her kids. She gets a good job where she's like taking care of her kids and supporting herself. A couple years go by and he reaches out to her. Let's do it again. Let's make this work. Let's, you know, I feel like men like that are abusive can't let go. You know what I mean? Like, they just keep on...
It does seem that way.
...reaching out. Like, they can't let them move
must
on.
Must be a control thing.
Exactly. So, they start talking again, and so he's talking to her, you know, like, trying to talk her into moving to the United States, saying, there's better opportunities for you here. You can make more money. Bring your children over here. Yada, yada, yada. So, she quits her job. And leaves her two kids with mom and dad, her family, and she moves to the U.S., to Florida, to be with Paul. So they live in an apartment together, and she begins working two jobs at a strip mall that's just a few blocks away from their apartment complex. So she doesn't have a car, so she just walks to her job. So she works at a beauty supply place. Like a Sally's. Mm-hmm. It's not a Sally's, but it's...
Yeah.
And then at a Quick Mart, like a gas station. So she was working her 4-hour shift at the beauty supply store the day that she disappeared. So she calls her 17-year-old daughter back home in Trinidad all the time.
Okay.
Her name was Sarah Lean. I'm probably not pronouncing that right. So she calls her on her break, per usual. And they chit-chat, and she tells her, you know, hey, I'm going to call you when I get off work. But she doesn't. So right away, her daughter's like, something's wrong. She always calls me. So she doesn't call her that night. And she tries to call her mom the next day. And there's no answer. Lisa also fails to show up to work. Several days pass. No one's seen her. No one's heard from her. And her daughter starts getting like text messages from her mom. Like, I'm okay. I'm good. And her daughter was like, my mom never texts me. Never.
Oh.
And she
just always talks.
She just always calls. So she was like, this is weird. And like, she would text her back and ask her things and she wouldn't respond. So she's like, this is not.
Weird.
Yeah. And she even spelled her name wrong.
Oh.
And she was like, my mom knows how to spell my name. Like, that'd be like me spelling Max's name wrong. Like, you know your kid.
Yeah. That'd be
so, yeah. Very weird. Red flag. Weird, weird, weird. So her family in Trinidad call her Lisa's sister-in-law who lives in Philadelphia. And they're like, hey, we're really worried because we haven't spoke with her, blah, blah, blah. Like I said, she's sending texts to her daughter. She sent some also to her brother, Lisa supposedly texting her brother and just like saying random things. Like one of the texts that he received says, I'm sad because I'm going to miss Paul.
What?
And so her brother would ask questions she wouldn't text back. Another text said, with all that's happened, he was still good to me in the end. And so they're like, wait, what? She never texts. So why is she not answering? And then they would call her and she wouldn't answer. So it's just weird. Another text kind of insinuated.
It's like when you send a vague text about a relationship or something, I know from experience with friends, you call, what? What's happening? Yeah. Tell me in detail.
Tell me. Yeah.
You don't just... Not respond.
No response. No answering.
No, that's weird.
Another one of the text messages that she sent to her brother said, kind of insinuated she was in the Jacksonville, Florida area. But instead, like, I don't really know the area that well, but this is where I am. Police would later get cell phone records and show that, like, her phone never left Miramar. And her phone was always with Paul's phone. Like, it was pinging off the same tower.
Exactly. Yeah.
So anyways, sister-in-law calls police down in Florida. You know, she's in Philadelphia, calls the police down there and kind of explain the situation to what's going on. Just so happens, the cop that she's talking to knows Lisa. Because he goes, him and several of the other police officers are kind of regulars at this little quick stop, this little gas station.
Okay.
So they're like, yeah, we know her. Like, we know her. So they go to the quick stop. They interview other employees, the owner, you know, all that, and get the same thing that we haven't seen her. We haven't talked to her. She's very responsible. It's not like her to not show up from work. She's not answering phone calls. So now she's a missing person at this point. Like the cops are like, okay, there's something going on. So they go to Paul's apartment and ask him some questions. And he's really weird. Like his responses are really weird. They got weird vibes from him. So 2 days later, they go back and they check the apartment out. There's no clues. They don't have any answers. They're just like, we don't know. Like, we think he's involved just by the way he's acting. We don't have any way to connect him to anything. So they do notice that he's got cuts on his hands and forearms, which is a red flag. So they ask him to come to the police station. They take pictures of everything. He says that the week before this, before she went missing, that they got into a fight and that she pulled a knife on him. And these were defensive wounds that he was trying to attack her. But the cops are like, there's no scabs. Like, this is not, they're not healing if this was a week ago.
He wasn't.
No, he's not really that smart. They did search the home. Like, forensics went in and searched it. They did have, like, trace blood in the bathroom. Not, like, a significant amount, but there was blood evidence. So at the police station, you know, they're talking to him, they're asking him questions. He says the day that she went missing, October the 7th, that she came home and told him that she was leaving and wanted to pack her things and it was over. Because I guess when she got to Florida, it was shocker, tumultuous again, all the fighting, nothing changes. Guys like that don't change. Yeah. So it just fell right back into the same pattern. And so she came home and told him, like, I'm leaving you. And so she was going to pack her things. And he said he left and let her pack. And when he got back from being gone, all of her stuff was gone. But they're like, she doesn't have a car. She doesn't have a driver's license. Did somebody help her move? Was somebody with her? And he's like, no, I didn't know. I don't know. I left. So I don't know what happened after I left. But he was only gone for like an hour, he said. Okay. So she's packed her entire 4 years worth of stuff. No car. And he's like, I haven't seen her or heard from her since then. Again, the cops are like, that's weird. So they had also talked to other friends and interviewed other coworkers and people that she knew. And they pretty much said the same thing, that she was talking about leaving him. Mm. It had been crazy, the relationship, and she did want out. And she did want to pack her things and leave, but she didn't want to do it when he was there. And he called in sick that whole week. Ooh. It's like he knew. So he never left. So she couldn't get her stuff and get out. Mm. So it kind of corroborates his story a little bit. But and he even admitted to the cops that, like, yes, we did fight, and sometimes it did get physical. So he's not lying about that.
Yeah.
But anyways, now he's even more the prime suspect.
Well, yeah, of course.
Of course. She had actually told friends that one night she was sleeping, and he was standing over her. Like, she woke up, and he was standing over her with a cord wrapped around her throat. And said he would use this on her if she didn't start listening to him.
Oh, my God.
And so that's a big reason why she was like, I need to get my stuff and leave. But I can't do it when he's here. Because if I do,
he'll try to kill her.
He's going to try to kill me, basically. So these same friends would also say that she had sent several text messages to them saying she had left town because she got a new job. But it was the same thing with her family and her daughter. But she's not answering phone calls. She won't return texts. She's not answering questions. We just got a random message saying, hey, I moved. I got a new job. Whatever. So everyone's like, this is weird. So Paul, ex-boyfriend, prime suspect, but they don't have anything on him.
That's true.
So the cops, not knowing what happened, clone her phone number. Because they're like, we know she's getting messages. Or, you know, she's sending messages from this phone number.
Yeah.
And we know there's something going on with him, but we can't figure anything out.
Yeah.
So they assign her number basically to a new phone. Like, they clone her phone number. I don't know.
What are they doing?
Somebody's going to write in and somebody's going to completely make fun of me for not knowing my shit. But because I don't know technical stuff. So they basically assign her number to a new phone. Like, they have it. So they're just like sitting around and they're like, we're going to text him. We're going to text Paul from her phone number. Like, it's coming from her phone.
Oh, okay.
And we're just going to see. What happens. Let's just see. Let's just bait him and see what happens. Mm-hmm. So they do this and they send him a message that says, just wait till I get better.
Send. What?
That's what they text. Just
Interesting
wait.
Choice.
Just wait till I get better. Send.
Oh, okay.
And they've been watching him. So they've got, like, cars on him. Like, they're watching him just to see his, you know, because he is their suspect.
Yeah.
A few hours later, he leaves his house.
Okay.
And goes to, like, five different locations. Like, he's driving all over, and they're following him. And at one point, it's like he almost thinks someone's following him. So, he's turning down, like, dead-end streets and, like, just random places. But there were several different law enforcement agencies involved now. So, they could kind of spread out. So, if this car thought it was being followed, then this car would come in. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Kind of playing it like a ping pong ball.
Yeah. Okay.
So they follow Paul to several different locations and just kind of seeing where all he's going. And
where is he going?
So, like, he would go to one place and, like, turn around and leave, and there just happened to be, like, a dumpster there. So the cops would radio and be like, we got a dumpster. We need this dumpster search. So they were keeping track of where he went and mm-hmm. what was around to then call in people, you need to search here.
Yes.
Or you need to bring the cadaver dogs here and look. Because first of all, they don't know what they're looking for. Are they looking for a body? Are they looking for a murder weapon? Are they looking, you know what I mean? Like, they don't know. They just know something's up. Because a couple hours after they sent that text.
Well, do you think he thought that she had somehow lived in, like.
No. I mean, okay. You would think, or that somebody was playing.
Because that's such a weird text to get.
But you have her, phone in your phone. So, yeah. Or maybe he doesn't have her phone in that. Anyways, yes, random. Hmm. So, he left, got in his mom's car. Like, he was at his mom's. Got in his mom's car and, like, is driving all over, and they're just like, check here. He was in this parking lot. He turned around at this mm-hmm. field. So, yeah. So, they get search warrants he ends up at one of his friend's places. Like, one of his friend's houses. It was a coworker of his. And went in, was there for just like 10 minutes and left.
Weird.
Yeah, super weird. Middle of the night.
Like, dude,
yeah,
what are you doing?
Well,
here?
And she had talked to him before, you know, because police did interview her, and she's like, he was working on a stove of mine. And so he would come over and work on it every now mm-hmm. and then, but it wasn't fixed yet. So it wasn't unusual really for him to show up. Mm-hmm. I mean, she said he did usually call, but it wasn't like.
Why there?
So she lived next to a big field by a football stadium and stuff. Mm. So, and she said she had asked him, like, or he had asked her, like, they were standing in the yard one day talking, and he was like, is this place pretty lit up at night? And she's like, well, I mean, yeah, yes and no, I guess. I don't know. I'm not really, you know. So she's like, he did bring that up. So anyways. Cops get search warrants for all these places, including hers, the field, get their cadaver dogs. Again, they don't know what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So they bring them out, and they hit on a spot. So they
in her yard?
In the field, like a field by her, behind her house.
So
they hit on a spot, and they dig up a sealed 55-gallon barrel. They don't know what's in it.
Oh,
they don't open it.
That would be the worst job to have to open that barrel to see what. Oh,
well,
my gosh.
Don't be a medical examiner.
I would never be an
examiner. They take it to the medical examiner's office where they open it up and they find Lisa's remains. Mm. Yeah.
Was anything in it? Like, was it in
part of her remains?
Was it an acid, or was it just
no?
He didn't have anything.
So in her body is in this barrel. She has been stabbed over 33 times.
33.
And
that's rage.
He has cut her head off. So it's just
Why? Just
her body from the neck down. So obviously DNA and everything matches. Her daughter had to donate or give, like, DNA and stuff and blood to, because, I mean, in fingerprinting and stuff. But, yeah, her daughter did end up doing that. So,
wow.
Stabbed over 33 times, and she is stuffed in this barrel. At this point, it is November. So it's been almost 2 months. So this happens the first part of October. This is end of November, December when they find her remains in this barrel. So blood matching Lisa's was also found, like I said, at the apartment that they shared and in the back of a rental car that he was driving. But again, it was just like trace amounts. So, but it was still something. So one of her friends actually said the barrel that she was found in was one that they had seen at their apartment because she used to put stuff in it and have it shipped to back home.
That makes sense.
To Trinidad, yeah, for like stuff for her family. So they recognized it. So now they've now linked the barrel to her, mm-hmm, to the home. They've seen it. So police arrest Paul on one count of first-degree murder, and he is held without bail. He did not speak during his trial. Nothing was said. Prosecutors said that he had stabbed her to death, cut her head off, hid the body in a field. And there really wasn't that much the defense could say. I mean, but again, he said nothing. He was convicted of her murder and sentenced to life in prison. There wasn't a whole lot about her trial. Yeah. Her daughter did, appear by phone.
Yeah.
For, like the trial, like a, what's it called? The impact statement.
Oh, impact statement. Yeah.
Yeah. And said, words cannot express the pain my family has endured since my mother's death.
It's horrible.
It's terrible. So, yeah. So her head has not been found to this day.
He wouldn't say where it was.
Wouldn't say anything.
That makes me so mad. I hate when they...
So, that's the story and the disappearance of
So, they Lisa went... What happened at the dumpster that they looked at?
No, there was nothing. He that's what they were saying, that like they thought maybe he was on to them or thought he might be being followed because he just was like
he was giving them red herrings.
Yes.
He would
drive
okay
over to the gas station and like go inside and then come out, or like drive to a friend's house and go inside and come out, or you know what I mean? He was just like, he never really, they said, they didn't think he made them, but he was driving.
Yeah.
No rhyme or reason. Like he was trying to lose somebody or whatever, but yeah.
He's so sick. I wonder why, because...
She was going to leave him.
No, I mean, why ahead? Because they were going to be able to identify her.
Right.
Ugh.
But yeah, he decapitated her and her head's never been found to this day.
Oh my gosh.
And it won't be. I mean, it's Florida. It probably got eaten. It's probably,
Yeah, the...
But that's terrible. I could not imagine. It's bad enough to lose a family member, but to then have them, their body be just, no. Yeah. That's just rubbing salt in a wound.
Absolutely. And I know that's not what happened in this case, but I can totally see how sometimes there's a plea bargain to mm-hmm. know where the body is. Mm-hmm. Like, just tell us. We just want to put their body at rest. Or
yeah, get some closure for the family. Mm-hmm. So your girl's name was Lisa, and my girl's name was Lisa.
I noticed that when I just started. Yeah. That's a very bizarre coincidence. So I knew our episode was going to be heavy. I didn't have to know what your case was. I just,
it's Florida.
So I wanted to lighten things up a little bit.
And please.
I Googled a few Florida man headlines.
Oh, God.
None of these are fake, okay?
So Florida man. Explain to the ones who don't know.
I mean, Florida's always in the news for
always
wacky stuff, and it's always Florida man, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And I think the explanation is something along the lines of they are required to give the news. Do mm-hmm. you know more about that? I just know they're required to say certain things, so everything makes the news.
Right.
So that's why there's every single weird instance that happens there.
It's in the news.
But it's always Florida man. They call it Florida man.
Florida man is...
So... All right, here's the first one. Florida man arrested for calling 911 after kitten denied entry into strip club.
Kitten?
Yes. His kitten wasn't allowed in. So I have no backstory. These are just the headlines. You can look them up. Florida man tries to steal rack of ribs by stashing it in his pants.
Stop it.
Florida man insists syringes pulled from his rectum aren't his.
I can't, my face.
They're not mine. They're up there. They're not mine. They belong to someone else. There's a bazillion online, but here's my last one. Florida man charged with assault with a deadly weapon after throwing an alligator through a Wendy's drive-thru. I had to include an. There were so many alligators.
There has to be an alligator.
Oh man, no. So these are the things we wouldn't cover, but they're still.
There's so many. It's hard to narrow. Florida, y'all need to get your lives together. You really do.
We love you, Florida.
We go from one extreme to the other. We went from like, which one? Was it Montana? That there was like nothing, which is good. To Florida, which like it's like
everything.
Everything you read, you're like, oh my God, I want to know more about this.
Love your beaches, hate your murders.
Love your beaches, hate your murders. TM, TM, TM.
Yeah. It was hard to narrow down a Florida case.
For sure.
Good Lord. I didn't look, but there's probably Florida-only podcasts, and they could last forever because.
Yeah, there's several. So where are we next week? Not Florida.
Colorado? Oh, Colorado. Yeah, that's a good one. We haven't spent much time in that area of the state.
No.
Of the U.S.
No, we have not. That either.
Like, what is this? No.
You were just there.
Yeah. Yeah, I was.
Lacey was just there.
Yeah, I did a ghost tour. Join us on Patreon and check out my
She did ghost the whole, hunt. The whole Stanley. Orbs.
Yeah, I did the Stanley experience.
The
saw some elk.
The old red rum.
Yeah, I did. I wore my shirt the whole time, my United States of Murder shirt.
Lacey's just promoting this everywhere.
Wearing my investigative or
hilarious
internet detective hoodie. And Samuel said at one point, he's like, have you worn that every day?
Like, yep. Listen. Just like at home.
Different shirts are under here and I'm showering. It's not that weird anyway. So it's kind of funny. I love doing these little Instagram polls on here. And I did the who loves karaoke or who loves to sing karaoke. Me, you, both of us, or neither of us. Everyone picked either both of us or neither of us. One person, Kathy, guessed right that it's me.
It's Lacey. I'm not singing karaoke.
And I'm like, it's so funny that everyone's like either like, yep, they both do it or nope, they're not.
And also join the Patreon because I videoed Little Miss Singstress Lacey here.
No one needs to pay for that.
Belting out her melody.
We'll lose listeners. They're like, oh my God.
And
I'm not a good singer and I don't claim to be one, but it's fun.
I think you did amazing.
I was surprised you're not. I think I was thinking everyone would be like, oh, Ashley loves
this. Why?
I don't know.
No.
I was shocked. We tried to get her to sing Prince by putting her name in, and she didn't.
Not happening.
Even after you left, he was like, Ashley.
She's left the building. She is not singing. She will hurt everyone's feelings and say no. Mm-mm.
We did love Shaq after you left. I think you would have enjoyed that one.
Participating or listening?
Both.
No,
participating.
I just can't do it.
Group karaoke? No group karaoke-ing?
Mm-mm. No.
Really? Mm-mm. What's your number?
What's my number?
Yeah, everyone
that's
has,
a trick question.
Everyone has you don't a ask payment.
That. You don't ask that on the podcast.
Everyone has a price. You can be bought
none
for
of your
karaoke.
Beeswax. What my number is. Thank you.
Oh my gosh.
What's my number for singing?
Like, what's your price? How much would I have to pay you to sing karaoke?
I don't know. A lot.
Oh my gosh. Start a GoFundMe. No, I'm just joking.
If you would like to hear Ashley sing karaoke.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so an easy way to follow us on all the things is go to UnitedStatesOfMurder.com.
And then just click.
I don't know why I didn't say that sooner. You can click on our Patreon there, our shirts, merch, all that there. You can send us a message there. Find us on social media there.
A listener story there.
Yeah, you can enter in. You can chat with us on there. Or you can just email UnitedStatesOfMurder@gmail.com.
And we have over 20,000 downloads now.
What's
our number now?
It's over 22,000. We forgot to make the announcement when we recorded our New York. I'll never say New York. Yeah, let's look for the official number. Oh, and we have a new country listening. Israel. Hi,
Israel.
22,149.
awesome.
Yay, thank you so much.
Thank
Y'all
you
are awesome.
So much.
We love you. We can't believe you like listening to us. I'm just kidding. What are you
it's
doing?
It's just because Lacey's not singing.
Oh, yeah. No, we'd be at a... We'd be negative. We have negative
Shut
listeners.
Up.
But anyway, join us next week.
Yes. Bye.
Bye.